Hey, everybody, welcome to this week's episode of Red Pill Your Healthcast. My name is Dr. Charlie Fagenholtz, and here with Lauren Johnson, FNP. And we're going to keep answering some questions. So this one's not going to flow like last episode, where it was almost like a storybook. But let's just go with the top one I wrote down was people asking about CRP, C-reactive protein. And in general, CRP is essentially an inflammatory marker. So functional range is between 1 and 3. I think anything above 1 is too high, in my opinion. And so it is a general acute phase reactant, essentially. So it is a general screen for inflammation, systemic inflammation. Doesn't tell you what, doesn't tell you where. That's where frequency medicine comes in the best, is to find that out. But I will say, on top of finding out what's causing it, the nutrients that I have found to work the best for it are bicalin and berberine, which is scutellaria and golden thread, and fish oil can really help as well.
Yeah. Anything to cool down inflammation. I think it's just a general marker. I wouldn't use it as a reason to get upset or anxious because it can be high. I mean, we found CRP elevation with COVID a lot. And so it can be high for a lot of reasons. And so sometimes it's an acute thing. Sometimes it's more of a chronic thing. I do think adding on herbal support, increasing antioxidants, kind of assessing your life. I think it's a good thing to say, okay, what other symptoms might I be having that I may not notice? Could it be I'm eating a lot of food sensitivities that I know I have right now, and it's increasing overall inflammation? I just look at it as a general marker. And if you want to get more specific, then I would go towards something else. But I do think it's a helpful marker to have.
Totally. And like the highest I've seen clinically is someone had like 70 to 80, and that was a Crohn's patient.
Yeah.
So there's a significant amount of inflammation in the digestive tract. And I kept finding parasites and I think fungal, but I think parasites were like the main thing in that case. But again, general indicator of inflammation. All right. Next question. Is CBD better than alcohol?
Yes.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, so I know, Charlie, you are a proponent, I would say, of marijuana in ways.
Yeah, you use properly, I'm a proponent of it for sure.
Right. I am not necessarily, but like I am a proponent of CBD, and most definitely it in relation to if you're comparing it to alcohol. Because alcohol is, I mean, like the funny thing is like there's tons of studies on this. Like alcohol is not good for the brain, for the body, for anything. I'm not talking about like if you go and have a random glass of wine one night every 6 months, that's probably not going to impact you. I wouldn't even worry about it if I did have a drink, but like, it's more just the idea that drinking alcohol regularly is in our culture and it's okay for everybody to do. And it's like, it's not, and it's not healthy for the body. A lot of the wine today is just really sugary and it's a lot of pesticides. And so it's also you're consuming that too. It's not just that it's not good for you. That it's alcohol. It's also what is in it. And so just kind of consider those things. But there's been a lot of studies. I have a post on it linking some of those studies so that you can go and research that for yourself. But yeah, definitely a proponent of CBD.
Yeah, and if you just look at it basic terms, every single cell of your body has 3 known receptors on it. I'm sure there might be more. Someone who's really into biochemistry will probably, say, well, you're forgetting this or this, but 3 really important ones: a thyroid receptor, a vitamin D receptor, and an endocannabinoid receptor. And if every cell of yours has that type of receptor, you know that firing that receptor properly is probably a pretty good idea. And so CBD will regulate nervous system, fight or flight. It will regulate digestion. It will regulate metabolism. It regulates inflammation. It's antiviral. It's very immune system regulating. They've done research on the spike protein in CBD and how it really helped with SARS-CoV-2. So I'm a big proponent. I'm a big proponent of marijuana. I think that it's abused. It is an estrogenic plant. So if you have estrogen dominance and you don't clear your hormones properly, might be an issue for you. If you have hypoglycemia, low blood sugar, also can be an issue for you, because one thing that marijuana is really good at is dropping your blood sugar. But so for someone who's a diabetic, might be better than doing drugs. You know, a type 2 diabetic, I would prefer to do that over metformin at first. And I, you know, obviously I'm not a proponent of metformin. I think there's better herbals that really do what metformin does, but even more of the inflammatory loops. But so you have to, you know, you have to know what you fall into, what your patterns are. And so I'm a big fan of CBD. I love Fringe's CBD powders. They're tasteless, and there's two different ones. They, over at Fringe, tend to like go towards the Henko one. I actually find that the mono one tested more on my patients when I test patients on it. Either one. With CBD, it's kind of like, try it, see how you feel. You know, if you need more dose, okay, you did too high of a dose, back it up. Like, everyone's different because everyone's receptors are primed a little differently. And then if you've been following me lately, I found since Thanksgiving, those Rosebud CBG pre-rolls, that's what I do instead of alcohol. CBG is kind of the parent to CBD, but it gives you a good chill, uplifting type vibe. Obviously, some people are going to have an issue with smoking anything. Again, how much of your mental stress of trying to be perfect is destroying your health? And so instead of having that alcoholic drink, I'd rather have a full organic pre-rolled that is organic hemp paper, hemp filter, and organic outdoor grown CBD on a small batch family farm. To me, that sounds like a good time. I do it all the time when I am cooking steaks, when I'm barbecuing. That's what I prefer. And that's my story. I'm sticking to it.
I would say for marijuana, I just know that a lot of marijuana is probably not well sourced.
And oh yeah. Pesticides galore.
Pesticides and mold.
Yeah.
And so I would be cautious. I am not a super pro marijuana person. But I do obviously I've seen like all of the benefits of it with a cancer patient.
Yeah.
And in certain circumstances, definitely I think marijuana is a great option if done right.
Yep.
But I have a lot of concerns with like just recreational, like, cause if you're just going to buy it at a random store, I just really don't think it is going to be good for you. There is no way that it's sourced well.
You know that it's going to be, here's the issue is, and because I've known the marijuana industry, is that with the stores and the dispensaries, there's a super high turnover rate. So they are not inspecting and really allowing plants to mature properly because they're in it for profit. I do know people who have grown their own marijuana and done it responsibly. And I can tell you, it is a different experience when you smoke it or eat it. Guaranteed. It is a totally different experience. And it goes back to, again, as Lauren is saying, a lot of fungus in the buds, a lot of pesticides, which create more fungus.
Which could be an issue for those women that are estrogen dominant or have totally fungal infections. Because most women have been on birth control at some point, and that means you're going to have a lot of fungal issues probably too.
Yes. So, but if you're doing CBG, CBD, that's not marijuana. Right. So that's two separate things. But yeah, I'm a big fan of CBD, no doubt.
Yeah. And definitely as opposed to drinking alcohol. I think that a lot of culture today is shifting. I do see that with a lot more like sober being cool. And so I know it's a cultural thing. I know that it's a cultural thing in college and after college and for moms and dads and just in general in life. And I just think it's just a crutch. And I think that you'll find that you'll be a lot happier and feel a lot better without alcohol. And you're, especially if you're drinking daily.
Totally. I'm not a,
and
not
especially
a fan
if it's like, oh, it helps my mental health to drink. And so that's why you're comparing CBD versus marijuana or versus alcohol. Well, that's a no brainer because alcohol will only take more from you and your mental health. Because it deprives you of nutrients, of B vitamins, thiamine, of multiple nutrients. It wrecks the gut. It wrecks your nutrient absorption from food. It lowers blood sugar, and so in as well as what he was saying with marijuana, but it lowers blood sugar, and it's going to that can make you more anxious.
Yeah.
And definitely the next day, we all know the effects of that. So it's just not something that I think would be helpful at all for mental health.
Yeah, and think about it. Alcohol is sugar, so at first spikes your blood sugar, and then it drops just as quick, and it's the drop and roller coaster effect that shocks your system and your endocrine system, and nothing can happen properly after that. So
yeah.
Marijuana will drop it straight. It won't raise it, but it will drop it, and in the wrong person, that's going to create that same type of shock to the system too. So got to use it responsibly, and know your constitution, know your health picture. But okay. Moving along, febrile seizures. I've seen a ton of this clinically. What do you think about febrile seizures?
Yeah, I used to be very like, I understand you want to give Tylenol. I still think you should lower it with the febrile seizure. But even and when I was working in a conventional office, I would have patients that had febrile seizures and they would get back from their neurologist and they would say, well, even the neurologist says Tylenol won't help. Because it can't necessarily, you can give it, but it may not prevent a seizure. And then some parents would say, well, actually Tylenol is what caused it because I was giving Tylenol and it dropped it too fast. And so, cause it's any jump in temperature, whether it's down or high or going up. So I really don't, even from a conventional, like non-root cause perspective, there really isn't a good way to prevent them. They are just going to happen. And if we look at it from a root cause perspective, we see a lot of imbalances. Is that right, Charlie?
Yeah, I would say that every febrile seizure that I've seen clinically, yes, there's a viral component, but viruses are only an issue when the immune system is imbalanced. And so I usually find there's a parasite underlying. And so we've done parasite stuff before on this. You can look into all that. But the nutrients that help are calcium and essential fatty acids. And so I will use Matrix Synergy, which has flax and calcium, magnesium. And then the third one is vitamin C, actually. So vitamin C, calcium, and essential fatty acids are the three that I have found to be low or imbalanced in people that have febrile seizures. So Matrix Synergy is one that I like for that. Sometimes I will throw in more actually calcium lactate. I find that calcium lactate from standard process is one that I have found just test consistently and really can help. Really can help.
That I was going to say that calcium lactate from standard process. Also looking into B vitamins and magnesium, there are a couple studies linking those with, but again, that goes back to parasites because what do parasites rob you of? Your nutrients.
Right.
And so there are things that can help short term. Here's what I want to say though, is if you have a child right now that has febrile seizures and has a fever, and I want to say that you're not wrong if you want to lower the temperature. You can. No one's saying not to. I would say try to lower it naturally because that is when you're going to see the body be able to regulate it better and not have big jumps. A lot of times these seizures happen at the beginning of a febrile illness. And so it's like it goes from all of a sudden they weren't sick to all of a sudden they're having a seizure. And so it's usually like a 98 to like 100 or a 98 to 101. It's not a super high temperature, like 104, 105, where you would like that. That's where you expect more consequences, but it's more at those lower temperatures and the big jump. And so I would just say to do what you think is best and to know that like, you know, your child best and like, you know, like what is best for them. And if you want to lower, you know, there are ways to do that. I use Epsom salt baths and warm water, not cool, but warm water, that you can do the wet wraps on the feet, the magic sock thing, wet sock thing. Homeopathy is great because that stimulates the body's healing response. I'll use cooling essential oils. I'll do different things like that to lower the temperature naturally. And that way you can hopefully stimulate that body's regulating response.
I echo all of that.
Yeah. We're so taught to be scared of fevers and to be scared of febrile seizures even. But typically febrile seizures are not going to cause any long-term issues. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be someone that's listening to this that has seen that cause a complex febrile seizure and them have some consequences and issues after it. But typically it's a simple febrile seizure. It happens. There is no brain damage. You can go on about, caring for your baby, your child naturally, and it not cause any issues down the road. I would still, of course, if the child is seizing, you need to seek help now. Like that is ER, as ambulance, that is get the seizure to stop. But typically it will stop on its own. And it is very scary. And I have witnessed them. They are awful. But you know that typically it is going to be okay. Just sit them on, you know, roll them on their side. You don't want them on their back, and all those types of things.
I agree. All right, let's keep going on febrile seizures with something that also affects little kids, young kids, is molluscum.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think about molluscum?
Just immune dysregulation, typically. I think it can happen on protocols, like when you're pulling out stuff and you're working on some root causes, it can definitely come up. A virus will come out and you know, that will happen. I typically would say if you have one spot, you know, it's probably not something I would be too worried about, but it is something that is still just a sign of that immune system not being able to handle it. And so there's a lot of things I do topically and internally that can help that body.
Yeah. Talk about some topical stuff. Cause I'm more of an internal person and topical is not usually never really in my training. I feel like ever since I started doing social media and stuff, all these crunchy moms have all these topical solutions. And it's just like, yeah, I must have missed that in my functional medicine training.
Well, you know, because topical isn't necessarily going to fix the problem completely. I do think it can. I mean, I have seen molluscum be just a really big rash and it get really better with a couple of these things, but I also have seen it not get better. And so I think you need to, because it's a multifactorial cause, you're probably going to have to address multiple things in order to take care of it, especially if it's an ongoing chronic big issue. Okay, so what do I use topically? The biggest thing that I've seen helpful is diluted lemon myrtle essential oil. You want to dilute it. It is a little hot, and that means diluting it with coconut oil or jojoba oil, something like that. And I usually make a dropper because I don't want to use a roller because you don't want to re-expose the area. And so I make a dropper and we'll drop some and cover the area. If you can do that a couple times a day at least for a few weeks, then you probably will see some benefit. If you want something that's pre-made, you could do something like Molluscum RX or Zymoderm. But I have seen the most benefit with the diluted lemon myrtle. I also like I will take some of the herbs like Woad Supreme or Black Walnut and putting that topically as well.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say is Woad is probably my number one. Olive leaf and black walnut are probably my close ones after that. Because a lot of times there's parasites underneath the virus, but it is viral usually. And so Woad and olive leaf, great for viral stuff. And Woad gets the EMF component of immune system dysregulation. So it's that and is coming up as a very top remedy for me lately. Black walnut's great. I've had people put it on them and help it disappear. Again, as Lauren said, there's no silver bullet. So it just depends per person. I throw in Immune Armor because with all bacterial and viral challenges, I always try Immune Armor. And then I am big in essential oil baths. So I mix Elite Harmony and Immune Harmony and put some Epsom salt in the bath and let them soak with it. So that's my usual.
I would say those baths are powerful as somebody whose child has benefited from those baths. I really think that's a great thing. It's a great soothing thing. It's great for the nervous system. It's really calming. So it's a great thing to start doing in your home. I also would just say it's not going to be like a quick fix. There's no silver bullet and there's not a quick fix. So it might be a couple weeks, might be a few weeks. Same thing with like the ringworm and like the other topical things that I talk about on my page. It's It's not something, but even the conventional stuff for those things takes weeks too. So totally. It's not like we're comparing, you know, it's not, it's this, it's the same. It's just those things will have other side effects. And so I love doing this, but I also would say to do it like 2, 3, 4 weeks. And then also incorporate some of these other supplements internally, maybe some vitamin C, really watch diet. Cause I mean, if the diet's off, that can affect the immune system too. Stress, mm-hmm. looking at the stress in their lives. Like, I mean, stress is not just like, hey, something happened with my friend. Think about stress as in like, are they staying up late on screens? Right. Is there something happening in a sport? Are they doing an after school activity and they really need downtime and rest? And you know, our kids are going at a faster pace than they've ever gone before in this world. And so that is stressful to the system, as well as EMF being stressful to the system and all the other exposures that we have today that we didn't have 100 years ago. And so definitely being mindful of all those things.
Yeah. And, the last two things before we go on to the next question is immune system balance. I love SRT technology, synthetic resonance technology placed over the heart or wherever you want to do it. It just helps balance the body. And anytime that there's any type of skin stuff that might leave a scar, red light, red infrared light.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely. Red light.
All right. Next one, there's two questions. We're going to group them into one. And because they both kind of go with smells. So one is, what if I feel like my sweat smells like ammonia? And my other one is bad breath. And they both come from the same animal. Obviously, if you have bad breath, that is a sign that your gut is not working. Generally, there is pathogens like SIBO, H. pylori, parasites, fungus. And what's happening is now turning down your stomach acid and your gallbladder enzymes, and you're not digesting your food, and that food is putrefying, and then you're getting bad breath. Same thing, ammonia is released by pathogens. Parasites, bacteria are the two main ones, but also fungus. And essentially, it is trying to come out through your pores because it is creating too much ammonia in your system. So for bad breath, I usually start healing the gut with golden thread and black cumin oil. That's my top two, and put some enzymes in there with GastroDigest, see if that fixes that. For ammonia, I usually like to support the liver, lymph, and then some antimicrobials with that. Golden thread, it does work, but I usually tend to more towards go with Malia, Morinda, Shisandra, and Mangista, and sometimes a binder like Takasumi.
Yeah. I would add in for ammonia, adding in the biotoxin binder is
yep,
a great,
it's another good one.
As well. And that can be alongside of herbs. Sometimes a binder is not necessarily something I would add. I think you just have to know yourself and know how you're responding. But I love that biotoxin binder for helping with that. Ammonia scavenger is another really good product that doesn't help kill the infection though. So like it's, you kind of have to, that might be a little more of a band-aid approach.
Yeah. All right. Next, we have two last questions. Quick podcast. Ticks/alpha gal.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it.
Alpha gal is, and we could go conspiracy theories on this, but like, I think it's so weird how much it's increasing. I think there's something to do with some Bill Gates inspired thing. Yeah,
trying to get everyone to eat that fake meat.
Because it is increasing. Like, we are seeing more. I bet you there's going to be evidence of this soon, but we are seeing more and more of it. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah totally.
It's something that they're eating, something they put in the animals, something, I don't know. And I'm sure someone out there is going to be like, oh, it's this and it's this. But like, there's probably a couple things going on. So with ticks in general, I just did a story on this. So basically, you want a tick key. You want to pull it off the right way. Please don't use a flame to do it, like my parents did when I was a kid. Please don't just pull it off because you might miss the head. And you want to get the whole tick. And so a tick key is super helpful. I mean, it's so easy and it makes it so much easier to pull off. Don't put any oils on it too. That is actually a big thing that I like when I first started using oils, they all said, use purification or use, I don't know, there was other ones to help the tick release. No, that the tick could actually release what it has, and that could actually make it worse. And so don't put any oils on to help the tick release. Use the tick key, and then you want to put like a topical salve on it. You can make your own. Quantum Collective also sells one too. Yep. But you can use like French French green clay, I think, is what Dr. Steven Buhner, who is an herbalist who has a lot of experience with Lyme disease. And I don't remember the oil, but he maybe it was tea tree with it. But I typically that's what I do. And then Leadum homeopathic remedy. And I would do a couple weeks of cat's claw supreme. That's my next thing that I honestly, I think that's probably, I would just go to it, straight to it.
Yeah, I go cat's claw and Japanese knotweed. Japanese knotweed stops the morphing of tick pathogens and toxins. For alpha gal, I like black walnut supreme and ear acupuncture. I found that those two combos really help with alpha gal.
It's a specific technique, a type of acupuncture, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like SOT or something like that. Let's see.
It's something. And so you want to, if it's somewhere locally, I would ask them if they have
SAT.
Yeah, SAT. So ask them if they have experience with alpha gal. Ask them if they know this technique. And I always say to try to get a personal referral, like somebody who's gone to that person before. Stuff like any type of holistic care. I forgot to say one thing. So when you pull the tick off, put it in a bag and put it in the freezer, like a Ziploc bag. Do not throw it away because it might be helpful to actually look at the tick then and see what type of tick it is. Lone star ticks are one that I just immediately send off because I have seen in my conventional experience, I have seen 10 years ago, 10, 15, well, this was 15 years ago. I saw a lone star tick bite cause chronic hives and type 1 diabetes in the same person. And it was an awful situation. They were in the PICU and it's something that you really like. And of course they probably didn't think anything about it. In the country, tick bites happen and I don't stress about them, but I want to know what type of tick it is. And so but then also if your child or you get a rash, if you get a large lymph node near it, if you get a fever, anything like that, I would immediately send off. If you're concerned, like maybe you have no idea when the tick bit, it could be days. Maybe you just go on and send it then. That actually happened to me a couple of years ago and I had no idea. I mean, I was like, I wasn't the one who checked and I went on and just sent it. And it was fine. But it's just for peace of mind. Cause then if you know about Lyme, say they had, it had Lyme disease, you could go on and start treating it.
Yeah.
The issue with Lyme is if you don't find out about it, it can cause issues way like numerous down the road. And you want to treat it in that more acute period right after the tick bite.
Yeah. And if you're looking for Lyme stuff and all that, I have a deep dive in my membership that goes into everything we just covered really. And how if it's left untreated and you just do doxycycline and the antibiotics they give you, it's a big mistake because when it turns chronic, it literally affects every system of your body. And then you're the person just kind of like mold toxicity that they can't figure out.
Yeah.
So definitely a good thing to.
Or the child that you can't figure out. I've seen this in a child. Yeah. I've seen it.
Yeah, like rage and a lot of mood issues.
Yeah. And other things, I mean, I've seen it cause autoimmune stuff, big autoimmune stuff. And so, you just really want to go on and just make sure like it's worth it. Yes. Tick report. I think sending it to tick report costs $50.
Yeah.
You might be able to use like your HSA. I don't know, but like, is that cheaper than long-term chronic care?
Right.
And so let's just, be mindful of that and know that we're comparing this to long-term chronic care. I mean, Lyme has been linked to ALS. It has been linked to MS. And so like, it's not just like comparing it to going to the immediate care center, getting doxycycline and that being it.
Right.
So, cause that's not going to fully take care of the problem.
Yeah. There's, you know, I would say like, for the acute stage of, if you're bit by a tick or you find a tick on you, Japanese knotweed and cat's claw is what Lauren and I talk about. And I'm so for that. But one that I've found as well that's like acute is andrographis.
Oh, yeah. That's what Dr. Steven Buhner uses. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Andrographis is, it's kind of like people hear me talk about astragalus all the time. And astragalus is like the long-term immune builder. But the right here, right now killer in Chinese medicine is andrographis.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's a good one.
I would definitely consider, I would probably, I mean, if my oldest got it, I would probably say Andrographis and Cat's Claw.
Yeah.
And then I also want to stress, to as we are going into spring and summer and fall, which you can get a tick bite spring, summer, and fall, not just summer. Or and winter too, depends on where you live, I'm sure. But I want to stress that please don't not go outside because you're scared of ticks.
Right.
It is so important that we are out in God's creation and just feel and just with the earth. Like it is vital to healing. And if you are scared of every environment that you're in and you're scared of your home because you have mold, you're scared of outside because there's ticks, then you're never going to heal. And so I really recommend just going for it. Check your child for ticks, go out as much as possible. I do find that I honestly still use the Young Living insect repellent because I find it works best for ticks. There's a couple others that I use, but like that one I have had the most success with.
Cool.
Even the best bug repellent could still get a tick bite. And so check your kids when you come inside, check them as much as possible. Especially before bed. I know if you get in late, you're not going to want to check them because that's been me as a mom, but just do it. Check their head, check their neck, check armpits and behind the knees, elbows. I usually just like strip them down, a quick check, and then obviously checking their head, which is a big one. And then they can do their quick bedtime routine and going to sleep. But it is super, super important to check them.
I agree. All right. Last but not least, you had some questions about lead.
Yeah.
Let's talk about lead.
Lead's one that it scares a lot. It is scary because it's like, I mean, conventional medicine doesn't really have a great solution. And actually, they don't do anything about it until the lead's like 20. Did you know that? Like they don't do anything.
Yeah. That's crazy.
And in our office, we wanted it less than one. I would say, yeah, I don't want lead in my child, at all. No. There is no medical need. There is no physiologic need for lead. So like you shouldn't have it in your body. Obviously lead based paint is a possibility of exposure. It could be in the soil, in the water, probably a little bit too. Do you have any other sources of exposure that you've seen?
That's probably the biggest. I'm sure it's in some type of like smokes that are in things in the environment, but I would say
toys, old toys.
Yeah, toys definitely.
Watching some of the plates that they eat off of, like the ones that have like dyes, some of that can be lead in the dyes. I try to just get like non-dyed, like Corel white plates or something like that if you're going to eat off stuff like that. Okay, so what do we do to lower the lead? Toxumi would be a good one, right? Because it's a heavy metal.
Yeah, I like to, whenever it comes to metals, there's a few things. In general, I like to get rid of all the yeast in the body or the bad yeast because it's a natural chelator and it'll pull metals in. But we're talking lead specifically. So in general, I like to support the liver, and I like to, it's frozen. You there?
A thumbs up sign that came up.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I'm all frozen on mine.
Thumbs up sign. I don't know what happened.
I know. This is what's been going on with my Zoom. Every time that there's that goes on, it like freezes and stuff. So I'm trying to figure it out.
Okay. I think you keep talking because.
Yeah, that's fine. Soon they'll be able to see us, but they can't see us now. So let's keep talking. So basically what I was saying is I like to cleanse the liver and the blood, and the liver cleanses the blood. So I like burdock root, which is in GlyphoX, and I like Shisandra because that does all liver pathways. And I like Circutonic because molybdenum helps with all heavy metals. And so I would go that route along with the binder, as you mentioned, which is Takasumi. And the one thing I will say is, when do we use lead? We use lead to stop radiation from imaging, right? And so if we have a bunch of EMF in us, chances are we're going to be more prone to pull lead from the environment. So EMF goes back to Circutonic. I like black cumin oil, which does heavy metals as well. So that's my complete protocol. But yeah, that's what I would do right now. In the future, Cleanse Plus that's coming out in May that I helped reformulate is going to be a great one for heavy metals too.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. Oh, and then one more thing. So lead is typically checked with a 1-year visit for children. All of those things you could do for a child. LiPo-X.
Yeah, why not?
It's just one of those things where you just go slow and checking with the muscle tester near you.
Yep, totally.
Awesome. All right.
All right. Well, before this thing freezes completely and shuts off and we don't have anything to go off of.
All right. This is not medical advice. This is meant to be educational. Please speak with your healthcare provider before changing anything.
Thank you all for tuning in. We'll see y'all in the next one.